Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And we are off and running. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to jump into the chat room. A little something-something that I myself am doing even now as we speak. It's free. It's easy. Pick yourself out a screen name. Give yourself a password. Jump right in. Good evening, News Ninja Carol Baker. Good evening, Gerald. Good evening, Jeremy in Vermont. Good evening, John. Good evening, Ron. Good evening, Texas T. And good evening to Third Stage Guild Navigator Sparky, who has folded space and is both Sparky and Man Cave this evening. Thank you very kindly, Jeremy. Loud and clear on TuneIn, Jeremy tells me. Let's see. Did I mention the 22nd day of January 2015? I have now. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Thorn in the Side Thursday on the Horn. And not to wallow in a vat of my own misery, but I will warn in advance that I still feel awful. I'm trying to figure out if I feel awfuler than I felt yesterday or maybe marginally less awful. But better is not in the picture yet. I hope it will be soon. You hear that? No, that's not cowbell mute. Cowbell's still here. This, on the other hand, is ibuprofen, of which I am about to avail myself. No, I'll wait a couple of hours. Probably wise. Wait a couple of hours on the ibuprofen. Anyway, I only say that I'm still feeling kind of icky because I might be a little off my game this evening. I hope not, but there's always a possibility. So I will beg your forgiveness in advance. Let's see. It is as noted, Thorn in the Side Thursday. Thorn in the Side Thursday is reserved for and dedicated to the thorns in our side. Those examples of right-wing think, which make us go, "Don't!" Yeah. You get the idea. And early on today, I came to the conclusion that the competition had closed. Now, that's not to say there wasn't competition. But the competition closed pretty quickly as soon as I heard what you're about to hear. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you can also find the handy-dandy Listen Live player, as well as access to the archives, for which there is never any charge. There's never any charge for anything here at The Horn. And the reason for that is that there is a small, and I wish larger, but still amazing group of people who keep this on the air. And we do that by raising $150 per evening. Sometimes we raise more. Seldom. Sometimes we raise less. Sometimes when we raise less, we wind up in a hole. We are in a little bit of a hole this Thorn in the Side Thursday. We have $250 in fundraising to go this evening based on yesterday's deficit. And that means that we need 25 folks at $10 apiece, 10 people at $25 apiece. One person at 250, two at 125, and thither from there. The PayPal interface is there at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. You can also use the U.S. Postal Service, which will deliver happily your effort to help keep this going at or to the Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801, with the gentle caveat that checks and money orders should never be made payable to Bob Kincaid, but rather should be made payable to the Horn so that Boss Man Wayne can deal with them. And, you know, I never see him. So that's how that works. Thank you very, very kindly for all of your help that keeps this going. Because when you contribute, you make it possible for everybody else to have access to the streams, to the podcasts, to the 24/7 stream, whatever. Free and easy. It is based entirely upon desire and voluntary contributions. So that's out of the way, and hopefully that'll be the last mention of it this evening. I prefer it when it works like that. But as I said, we have a thorn in the side nominee that just stopped everyone else in their tracks. The competition simply closed the minute I clicked play. Friends, neighbors, brothers, sisters, kitties, cousins, aunts, uncles, I give to you the new, courtesy of C-SPAN 2, the new chairman of the Senate Environment and Public Works Committee, Senator James, oh my God, Inhofe. Strap in. Get the pocky puck. Get the
tape. Controlling carbon is a bureaucrat's dream. He said, if you control carbon, you control life. This is what bureaucrats would like to do. You understand that. I'd say to the chair, because he has served.
What's a bureaucrat? Is that somebody who runs a brewery? I never knew. Well, okay, maybe charcoal filtered. I know Jack Daniels is charcoal filtered, and that's carbon. But do we charcoal filter the beer? Anybody? Bueller? But no, this is James Inhofe, and he's talking about the bureaucrats. I think he may have had a Gibson or two before he came down to the floor, bureaucrats.
I'd say to the chair, because he has served in the other house, is new here in the Senate. Lindzen also said, talking about Al Gore. Al Gore at that time was Vice President of the United States. He was the one that was really, really pushing this.
Hey, Card, the CO2, climate change is not real because Al Gore.
Al Gore. Did I mention Al Gore?
He says, to treat all change as something to fear is bad enough. To do so in order to exploit that fear is much worse. And, of course, what he was talking to Lindzen, MIT, was the fact that Al Gore at that time, they had speculated that he would be the first environmental billionaire. That was speculated in the New York Times. So, anyway, after that happened, all the other scientists started checking in. These are scientists that cannot be challenged, these individuals. We have hundreds more, but I have a make on each one of these that I'd be glad to discuss or debate with anyone. But at the same time, other things were happening.
When was the last time we had a right-winger declare, I have here in my hand the names of communists, I tell you, communists who are busy communisting. In the Department of State, I tell you, commies. Now the Lindzen to which Senator Inhofe is referring is a guy named Richard Lindzen. He's a former, emphasis on the word former, MIT professor, kind of the way that Chappie Klingenschmidt is a former Navy chaplain. And Richard Lindzen has made himself a small fortune hollering, "Hey, global warming is a fake." Here. Now, Richard Lindzen is by training an atmospheric physicist. But he does not restrain his opinions to atmospheric physics. Unless the atmospheric physics also takes into the human biology of the pulmonary system, because this clown also has declared,
I think that evidence that cigarettes cause lung cancer, it's not so strong that one should rule any questions were out of order. Did my check come from the tobacco industry, Marcia? It did. Did it clear? Absolutely. You can ask any questions you want to about cigarettes and lung cancer, because it probably doesn't cause lung cancer. It might make you more manly or feminine or something. The check did clear. Good. Did the check clear from the American Petroleum Institute too? Good. Then global warming is still a fake. Climate change is still a big fraud. It's a dirty, filthy lie. You know, I get paid a nickel every time I say that.
Mm-hmm. So, James Inhofe has there a list of hundreds of scientists who say climate change is a fraud. Hundreds. Okay. Do continue, Jim.
The universities here in Virginia commissioned a poll to be done of all the weathercasters on TV.
Oh, boy. There was a poll of weathercasters? That's going to be some expertise. Are we strapped into our chairs? Are we screaming yet? Let me check back with the chat room. You guys are doing a good job of keeping it together so far. I applaud you. On behalf of Jim Inhofe, I applaud you, you bunch of bureaucrats, fagoots, Mazel Tov, not Molotov. I can't keep them straight.
They came back that 63% of the weathercasters said that any global warming that occurs is a result of natural variation and not human activities.
Of course, Mr. Inhofe won't tell you there that weathercasters are, and we kind of know this, don't we? Weathercasters are talking heads who stand in front of blue screens. I think in classic terms of Bill Murray playing, what was his name, Phil, in Groundhog Day? When he blows all the clouds away in the blue screen. Oh, no, I don't think the heavy stuff is going to hit us here in Punxsutawney, right? Weathercasters. That's how we know there's no climate change. Weathercasters. Now, weathercasters work for the for-profit media, correct? Just checking. Who owns the for-profit media?
A bunch of liberal leftist commie pinko fagoot agitators, that's who.
No. No. Great big right-wing corporations own the for-profit media. Why do you think that there's not a TV channel out there that's wall-to-wall, the Malloy, me, Rick Smith, etc., etc., etc.? Because that's not allowed. Yeah.
So when I hear people, and I know I have good friends on the other side, that really believe this, and I think that, you know, you sometimes you have to open it up and realize there is another side to this story.
Notice the slur. Notice the slander that he puts onto actual peer-reviewed science there. Friends who believe this. You know, just like some people believe that if you eat a special cracker, it'll turn into Jesus meat in your sweet little tummy. Or believe that, I don't know, Benghazi was the greatest threat to freedom since Bill Clinton got a blowjob. Believing. Remember, it is the most dangerous word in the English language.
So when they say that 97-98% of the scientists agree, that just isn't true. And we have the names and the things that have actually been said. I think one...
Does this poor old fool even have a speechwriter that can pull his notes together on a piece of paper? Or do they just eventually at lunchtime take the swirly straw out of the gin bottle and send him toddling off down to the little subway that runs between the Hart Senate office building and the actual Senate chambers? Because I'm voting for the latter. I don't know about you. This guy's drunk.
Thing that people are going to have to remember. Well, let me first of all say what happened today, because I know that they've been told that I would explain what happened today. My good friend, Senator Whitehouse, had an amendment. The amendment was one sentence. It says that climate change is real, and it is not a hoax. Well, there's a rule against talking about your own books on the Senate floor, so I can't do that. But that hoax came from a totally different interpretation. Hoax was the idea that this is happening, climate change, but it's due to man-made gases. In other words, man is causing that.
I wouldn't want to get within 3 feet of the man-made gases emanating from that dude's 100-proof mouth right now. I don't know about you. Do you see why I closed nominations as soon as I heard this audio the first time? I trust you do. Let's see here. Yes, Irish Dave. Inhof in the original German spelling was Dummkopf. Irish Dave points out, you know that Al the One invented invented climate change while getting a lap dance from Benghazi. That's Benghazy. I imagine her seven veils were all made of gauzy. Right. I know. It's going to be a tough few more minutes, but we got to get through this. I mean, I've not been within this proximity of so much stupid in a very, very long time. The first time I heard this, I hollered things that I'm trying very hard not to holler here into the interweb tubes and have, you know, last forever as an archive. You know, things like, why don't you go out and get hit by a bus, you dumb bastard? Don't see? This man is personally responsible. And by extension, and I know that we don't believe in collective punishment. But this man is personally responsible for a great deal of the disasters that are going to and have already begun to befall this planet. And by extension, therefore, the people of the state of Oklahoma are personally responsible, some sort of a majority of the people allowed to actually go and vote in that state, are personally responsible for foisting him upon the world. This guy isn't just screwing up America. This guy is screwing with the lives of peasants in Bangladesh. This guy is messing with the lives of people in the Maldives whose homes are literally sinking beneath the waves. And I know what literally means, and I mean that. This guy is personally responsible for the fact that we cannot get anywhere on climate change. Now a lot is being said about the upcoming meeting in Paris this year regarding climate change and the hope that we can come up with an agreement to which the whole world will become signatory. Yes, Gerald, as a matter of fact, Gerald asks, so does that make the Oklahoma voters assholes by proxy? I think by proxy and by personal conduct, but I'm not going to split hair, no. And News Ninja Carol Baker pointing out, you know, David Letterman, Raquel Welch, and Gilda Radner were all weathercasters, as was Diane Sawyer. I'm waiting for Hoof and Mouth to make a point. Well, you may be waiting a very, very long time. Where's the gin? I don't know. I don't know, Ron. Ron and Raleigh asking, why, for God's sake, aren't the Repiglicans embarrassed by this blithering idiot? The country is in deep, deep trouble. I guess if you can't be held responsible for your bullshit, you can just sling away. And sling he does. Let's continue.
What I said on the Senate floor today, I said, how arrogant is it for people that man can do something about changing climate. Climate has always changed. And I quoted this morning. I said it's changed. You go back and read the archaeological findings. They talk about climate from the beginning of time has changed and changed both ways. They talk about, and the scriptures talk about.
Wait, stop it. I knew it. You heard it. You heard it. He said scriptures. This guy. This clown, this asshat, this giant jug of jackass is going to rely on Bronze Age people who didn't know why it rains for whether or not the climate was changing. And then did Abnakezakar step out upon his portico and declare, my, ain't it dry out here? We live in a desert! Damn fool. Did you know? Because I didn't until just now. Oh, Dr. John, I'm so glad you weren't listening this evening. The archaeological record contains everything going back to the beginning of time. Yeah. Sure. That's going to piss off the paleontologists a little bit, I think. It might get under the skin of the paleogeologists, but... Well, the Jim Inhofe doesn't think much of them anyway. I want to back up a little bit and make sure we get the part about the scripture in.
Change. You go back and read the look at the archaeological findings. They talk about climate from the beginning of time has changed and changed both ways. They talk about, and the scriptures talk about it. And so this is something that everyone has agreed, and no one would debate.
Huh? Jim, if you can put down the guzzler's gin long enough, I'll be happy to debate you about the scientific accuracy of the effing Bible. Jesus. Oh, God. This is going to make me crazy, but I think this might be an appropriate time for just a little bit of an interlude, courtesy of the Prophet Bill Hicks. Peace be upon him. Yes.
Fundamentalist Christianity, fascinating. These people actually believe the world is 12,000 years old. Swear to God. Based on what? I asked them. Well, we looked at all the people in the Bible and we added them up all the way back to Adam and Eve. Their ages, 12,000 years. Well, how fucking scientific? Okay. I didn't know that you'd gone to so much trouble there. That's good. You believe the world's 12,000 years old?
That's right.
Okay, I got one word to ask you. One word question. Ready?
Uh-huh.
Dinosaur. You know, the world's 12,000 years old and dinosaurs existed. And they existed in that time. You think it would have been mentioned in the fucking Bible at some point. And oh, Jesus and the disciples walked to Nazareth, but the trail was blocked by a giant brontosaurus with a splinter in his paw. And oh, the disciples did run a-shrieking, what a big fucking lizard, Lord. But Jesus was unafraid, and he took the splinter from the brontosaurus' paw, and the big lizard became his friend. And Jesus sent him to Scotland, where he lived in a lock for oh so many years, inviting thousands of American tourists to bring their fat fucking families and their fat dollar bills. And oh, Scotland did praise the Lord. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord.
I told you it was. I told you it was called for. We got to go back. Sorry. We're going to get through this. We'll get through this together. Didn't say it was going to be easy.
Is whether man is causing that to happen. So here we have a chart that shows the.
I got a chart.
Do you remember the hockey stick? The hockey stick was the concept that one of the guys with the IPCC came out, and he said that it's like a hockey stick. We had this weather going like this for a long period of time, then all of a sudden it shot up and it resembled a hockey stick. But what they forgot was to put these two things in the hockey stick when it's supposed to be level. One is the medieval warming period that was between about 1000 and 1500 AD. We're talking about recently. And then that went into the Little Ice Age.
Sure, Little Ice Age, not a big one, just a little bitty, bitty one. Yeah. Now, never mind the fact that the hockey stick has been peer-reviewed. And peer-reviewed again. And peer-reviewed some more after that. Yeah. This is the work of Michael Mann, by the way. National Academy of Sciences, we might want to note, said in 2006 that the hockey stick is right good science. Lots of other peer-reviewed studies have worked with on the hockey stick graph, and they came to the same conclusion. But none of them were getting a check from the American Petroleum Institute, so therefore, they don't count. They're not the good scientists. Oh, breaking news. This just in, courtesy of Carol Baker. Saudi Arabia's King Abdullah bin Abdulaziz Al Saud has shuffled off this mortal coil at the age of 90. Carol notes, I'm waiting for the right to cancel MLK Day and replace it with King Abdullah Thanks for the Fucking Oil Day. No. They're not grateful for the oil, Carol. They are, they're angry. They're angry. Cheap oil prices is bad for America. I done heard it here. I bet you if you hang out down to the quickie stop there in Hooterville, you'll hear it too. Mm-hmm. Well, fare thee well, your royal, majestic graciousness, and may the gates of hell open wide for you. Yeah, come on in. Hey, look, there's an open seat next to Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan. No, never mind the fact that the seat is covered in spikes. You just sit right down. We'll be happy to help. This will be interesting. I bet they'll how many heads do you think our royal, majestic, noble, gracious friends in Saudi Arabia will lop off in celebration. Oh, okay, yeah, that's true too, Carol. King Abdullah is not to blame for the cheap oil prices. Thanks, Obama! Cheap oil. Trying to kill America with these Kenyan Muslim cheap gas prices. Anti-colonialist hater of white people he is. But let's go back to the other asshole for a little bit.
We're kind of left off the chart. So we have looked back. Everything you look at talks about how many years in the past we have had this change that's taken place in climate. Now,
okay, just an observation. One, I don't see another human being in a single seat anywhere near Jim Inhofe, which is kind of a pity. Because this is one of those moments when the well-heeled, civilized behavior of the Senate is actually a problem. Because it would be handy to have, say, Senator Whitehouse, or Senator Markey, or Senator Merkley, or Senator Boxer, the former chair of the Environment Committee. It would be handy to have them just kind of sitting there, even out of range, just cackling uncontrollably at the stupidity of this man. Because he is. I mean, this isn't a good faith difference of opinion between a scientific community that is roughly evenly split. It really is 97% to 3%. The Inhofe says he has 4,000 renowned scientists who disagree with anthropogenic climate change. Hey, you can find them on my website. But Think Progress notes that the list actually only has 650 people on it, some of whom are indeed TV weather people. Others are geologists. A couple of them are anthropologists. And then there's a guy with no college degree whatsoever. Not that you have to have a college degree to understand science, but if you're going to cite your people who say that climate change is a hoax, man-made climate change is a hoax, it might be good to compare apples to apples. I mean, you've got a highfalutin PhD scientist who thinks in terms, you know, that you and I can only begin to imagine, and you're going to put him up against a guy who hollers drunkenly at the end of the bar. Let's understand something. There are 4,000 at least abstracts from peer-reviewed, published scientific papers that have been published over the last 21 years or so. They all state a position on the cause of climate change. Of those 4,000 abstracts, 97% are clear that it is anthropogenic, i.e. caused by human activity. That's what Jim Inhofe is saying is just not true.
And I'm going to do this from memory, but there are, in addition to these major changes like you're seeing on this chart, which is a chart that no one, this actually is the IPCC's chart, so no one's going to argue with that because they're the ones that dreamed up this whole idea. That's the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change.
Maybe.
But within that, I can remember when I first heard the terms global warming or an ice age. It was when they went back and they started tracing not long-term trends in climate change, in weather, but short-term, starting in 1895. From 1895 to 1918, they referred to as a cooling spell, possibly another little ice age.
Then scientific term, that cooling spell. That's what the eggheads call it. cooling spell. Whereas when Jim Inhofe gets out in the gets out of bed in the morning and starts calling down the damnation of the Lord God Almighty on his bedroom slippers for not being right there under the bed, that's what they call Jim Inhofe having one of his crazy spells. Yes. By the way, yes, for anyone keeping score, these are ad hominem attacks, because I will leave the really, really sciencey stuff to the scientists. And in fact, there's been some scientific fact, but this man is so loathsome. This man is such a burden to the continued existence of the planet that it is almost impossible not to go ad hominem on him. He can talk about his friends on the other side of the aisle and the right honorable, estimable, esteemed, glorious Senator Bob, all he wants to. But this man, James Inhofe, is a menace to humanity. Plain and simple. And he's going to be a menace to humanity until he goes to his long home, which, you know, given the fact that evil is a preservative, will probably be somewhere around 70 years from now. With every breath this man takes, with every word that this man speaks, he poses a continuing danger to the perpetuation of the human species on this planet. Now, we're the nonviolent people. We're the people who don't carry guns to freaking Walmart to get a loaf of bread. Well, maybe two. You need two bags now, you know, and a jug of milk. We don't do violence. We don't rub out political leaders like the other side does. So we're stuck with this guy until such time as, I don't know, the great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky decides to drop a weather balloon on his head. Or something other equally, well, maybe it'll be the goddess of irony. Who knows? Maybe he'll go to a hockey match. Maybe he'll go see the Capitals play in D.C. and get taken out by a flying hockey stick that gets over the glass. But we're stuck with him. And for the next 2 years at least, there's not a damn thing we can do about the fact that he is going to block every effort that is made to protect the human species on the only home that we have. You know, who is it? The Union of Concerned Scientists that maintains the Doomsday Clock? They recently issued a report saying that we are nearer to the midnight doomsday mark as a result of climate change. It used to be based on nuclear proliferation. I suppose it still is. But they've added in climate change, and they say we are closer to doomsday now, these scientists. Than we've been in the last 30 years. A lot of that has to do with this one man. Yeah, that's what I was alluding to earlier, Jim. Jim with an email saying, remember, there are 57 communists in the State Department. Exactly. The beginning of the McCarthy era. Right. Back to you, Jim.
1918, it started getting warm again. And so from 1918 to 1945 was a little warming period. And so that took place every 30 years. Then in 1995, from that period until 1975, for 30 years.
From 1995 to 75.
Cooling period. Here, Mr. President, is the key. No one will argue with the fact that 1945 was the year that we had the maximum increased surge in CO2 emissions. And that precipitated not a warming period, but a cooling period. Then, of course, 75 came along. What are those charts that showed in 1974? Time Magazine or one of those?
Yeah. Where are my charts?
And this is Time Magazine. This is the front. And they said, is another ice age coming? It's 1974. This is making my case. Everybody believed it. And they talked about global warming before that and then another ice age. But we're all going to die one way or another. Now, I put up the other chart, which is also Time Magazine. And this is when they said, oh, no, here's the last polar bear and all the ice is, so we have another global warming period. Both of them, Time Magazine, both of them 30 years apart. This is what has been happening for a long period of time. So recognizing this, we had a little experience that in getting back. And so I made a determination that I would not only support the White House amendment, since it was just one sentence and it said that climate is changing and it's not a hoax. I could clarify that by becoming a co-sponsor to his amendment. So I did that on the floor just a few minutes ago. And I said on the floor that, yes, it is changing. No one questions about that. But the hoax is that there are people who are so arrogant that they think they have the power to change climate. Now, that's the hoax.
Are we clear on that? That's the hoax. Never mind the fact that you can drill ice cores into glaciers and you can see the climate change. Never mind the fact that climate change can be viewed inside tree rings. Never mind that the planet keeps getting actually hotter and hotter and hotter and hotter, contrary to the outright lies that this lying liar is lying. See, this is one of those fun little civics moments where you can learn how the Senate works. There is apparently no rule in the Senate's rules of decorum and conduct and comity, that's comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y, not C-O-M-E-D-Y, which if this wasn't so damn serious, it would seem like. There is nothing in the Senate rules that prevents a senator from getting up, addressing that august body, the single most exclusive country club on earth, and lying through his miserable, filthy, stinking teeth. Because that is, of course, what Jim Inhofe is doing. Are we clear? There is no rule that prevents senators from lying in the Senate. In fact, in point of fact, by rule of law, this man is immune as a matter of law for anything he may say on the floor of the Senate. He could call for the death of millions of human beings, and he would be immune. Wait a minute, that's exactly what he's doing. Because this man is arguing against the entire body of accepted science that human beings cannot change the climate. When in fact, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of examples of exactly how that happened. And in point of fact, on the floor of the United States Senate, this man, this liar, this fraud, this millionaire charlatan is arguing in favor of millions. And bear in mind, they're almost exclusively poor people. Because the wealthy usually find a way to get out of the way. He is arguing in favor of the miserable death of millions of poor people around the world. And there is not a damned thing that anyone can do about it. That is the reality. horrified yet?
That it's the climate is changing. So that is what has been happening. And when some of the scientists came out and they started changing back and forth, and all of a sudden people realized this whole thing was cooked up by the United Nations, IPCC was part of that.
Get us out of the UN!
They found out that some...
I can't tell you how many times I've seen that on a bumper sticker. Of course, it was provided, kindly provided by the John Birch. Just, get us out of the UN! The UN is going to... They're trying to say we changed the climate. Commies. Pinkos. Fagoots!
The scientists that were behind this were it was discovered that they had some emails that were sent out saying and proving conclusively that they were cooking in the science, that these scientists were lying, that they were and
everybody was involved with it, even the people who weren't. A giant conspiracy. Chemtrails. Magnetic vortices. Solar flares! The Malarkey Bolshevik curve! Cycle! See?
One of the things that was discovered that came out was an email from one of these scientists to another, and that was 1999.
And never mind the fact that it's been thoroughly investigated, debunked, debunked, and has nothing to do with whether or not climate change is real.
Emails! Benghazi! IRS! Tan suits!
Red, and I'm quoting now, I've just completed Mike's nature trick, adding in the real temperatures of each of the series for the last 20 years. In other words, they're cooking the science at that time. This thing was such a scandal that throughout the world, we didn't hear nearly as much in the United States, but we did throughout the world. The UK Telegraph, that's one of the, maybe the largest communication in the UK. They said it's the worst scientific scandal of our generation. What they're talking about, the scientific scandal, is that they're trying to make it sound like man is responsible for all these things. The Financial Times came out. They said the closed-mindedness of these supposed men of science is surprising even to me. The stink of intellectual corruption is overpowering. One of the IPCC physicists said that ClimateGate was a fraud on a scale I've never seen before.
Well, actually, the fraud is the allegation of ClimateGate itself. Because it really has. This is not a joke. It really has been thoroughly, completely, totally, utterly, and undeniably debunked. Plain and simple. Only it hasn't been debunked in the thin gray settlings that pass for brains that slosh about between the ears of Jim Inhofe. And that's an interesting observation, Gerald. Just what in the hell would the GOP know about intellect in the first place? Yeah. And then there's Michael in Madison. Did I hear Inhofe mention scripture earlier? You did, Michael. You did. Why don't these scripture thumpers believe in man-made climate change? It's right there in their good book, ain't it? All man's got to do is sin a whole fucking lot, and it'll rain like never before. Well, I mean, yeah, the Homer sectionals cause earthquakes and hurricanes, and ain't that man-made climate? No, that's the wrath of God, because he loves us.
And this went on and on, and we could quote Newsweek, The Guardian, and all the rest of them. So it was known worldwide as a scandal. What was the scandal? It was that they had a bunch of scientists that were saying we're going to have to pass something like cap and trade, because
cap and trade,
the world to come to an end. So that was really what that was all about. Now we're going to have
they talk about arguing. Cap and trade is gone. Cap and trade is over. Cap and trade was, frankly, not much of a solution to begin with. Cap and tax is what we need. But if we did that, then the United States might actually have to get serious about renewable energy, and the folks over at the American Petroleum Institute and the people who own, you know, and that's the sad thing. Jim, never mind screaming at his house slippers, Jim Inhofe gets up every morning, and he goes to brush his tooth and you know, take a shower and all that. But sooner or later, the steam clears away from his mirror, and staring back at him out of the mirror is a creature that he knows is not even an independent, operating, self-actualized human being, but instead an owned thing. He's property. He is owned by the Koch brothers. He has no free will. He has no ability to form his own opinions. Rather, he's like one of those geese that are used for foie gras, except those geese don't vomit. And Jim Inhofe does. He gets up in front of the Senate of the United States and just vomits Koch talking points. And those Koch talking points are killing people. Now. And are going to kill a hell of a lot more in the future. And Jim Inhofe won't be here for us to say, behold the Judas. Behold the lick spittle. But that is exactly what Jim Inhofe is, and Jim Inhofe knows it. He is a bootlick. He's a lick spittle. He's a creature. He's a thing. He's a tool. And you know what? When Jim Inhofe's day is done and his race is run and his sun is set, the Koch brothers will throw him out on the slag heap like they do with any broken tool. And they'll go and buy themselves another tool. Granted, being a lick spittle if you're Jim Inhofe, being a toe suck if you're Jim Inhofe, pays pretty damned well. But every now and then they hand you those two pieces of bread with that big pile of shit between it, and they say, eat up, Jimmy! And he takes a big old bite. Because he isn't even really real. He's a creation. He's a golem. He's a conjurer, a capitalist conjurer of the Koch brothers and their ilk.
A debate, and we want to do that. I chair the committee called the Environment and Public Works Committee, and I chaired it 8 years ago. Then when the Democrats got control of the Senate, and now I'm back in that position. So we'll have a chance to have hearings. And, Mr. President, we're going to have hearings with prominent scientists to come in and talk about this thing. Because all they say now is, oh, the scientists.
You know, prominent scientists, like the guy without the college degree that sits down there drinking Milwaukee's Beast through a straw out of a plastic Solo cup, hollering about, they're hockey sticks! Yeah, they're going to have expert scientists on. And not one of them, even if we get a real scientist, not one of them is going to come across the table and say, you miserable homicidal maniac, why have you not been put away somewhere where you cannot harm humanity? Not one. Not one. Because even if it is a death warrant for a million people, above all, we must have decorum and comity in the Senate.
Settled. The science is settled. The science is not settled. And that's the reason my good friend Senator Wyden, I know, is wanting to make some remarks, but that's the reason that I made that statement today. And I think that we will have that very healthy debate, but let's keep in mind.
Yeah, we're going to debate. We're going to debate whether water is wet. And Jim Inhofe is going to bring forward a bunch of cockamamies, maybe some weather forecasters saying, no, damn it, it's bone dry. And we're going to, what's that phrase? Teach the controversy. Debate the controversy when the controversy is manufactured entirely of a paper mache fashioned from the Koch brothers' money. Away with you, Jim Inhofe. Enough of you. Poor Marty, suffering mightily, typing in all caps. You're killing me. Stop the torture. Stop playing this corrupt bastard. Remember, not clueless, just bought off. How are you going to know what you're up against if you don't hear him? No, no, not a golem, Marty. Golem. G-O-L-E-M. Golem, okay? So there we are at the close of the filibobster for this Thorn in the Side Thursday. There are plenty more thorns if you care to reach into the briar bush. And we will reach again and again and again. Well, unfortunately, I have to mention again that we are $250. We are in a $250 hole, $100 from last night, $150 for this evening. And thus far, we are at zero. Hopefully, that will change. Fair enough, Michael. Michael says, all this talk of tools, global climate change, sea level rise, and Bill Hicks conjured this possible bumper. Looks like a dandy. I agree with you, Michael. So we'll take a break here at the end of the filibobster, the Green News Report. Oh, okay. Ron pointing out, Bob Inhofe is 80 years old. There's at least a decent statistical chance he won't live out his term. But like I said, he'll just be thrown on the pile of old tools, and they'll get him a new one. Yeah? Yeah. You know they will. Because, you know, when in a place like Oklahoma, Stan, they ain't hard to find. Oh, no. No, no. No, no. So the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen is on the way. A little break. Lines are open. 304-574-8178. 304-663-4676. That's 304-663-HORN. I'm trying to burn that into your brain so that... hey, what's the phone number? 663-HORN. What's 304? Yep. Skype to Skype, Bob Kincaid, HORN. BobKincaid@gmail.com for email, at Bob Kincaid on Twitter, and, of course, Bob Kincaid on Facebook, as well as The Horn. Just look up The Horn, and that's our little private group where we have such a rousing good time. This is listener-supported, emphasis on the listener-supported part. Wait, okay, that's not going to work. Listener-supported. Conversation Radio. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Some triggers by millions of dumbfounded dipshits, and some say the end is near. Some say we'll see Armageddon soon. Certainly, hopefully, we'll. I sure could use a vacation from this station. One great big festering neon distraction. I have a suggestion to keep you all occupied. Mom's gonna fix it all soon. Mom's coming round to put it back the way it ought to be.
It's Thursday, January 22, 2015.
I'm not a scientist either. But you know what? I know a lot of really good scientists at NASA and at NOAA. And the best scientists in the world are all telling us that our activities are changing the climate.
President Obama's State of the Union address focuses on climate change.
The Keystone Jobs Bill.
The Keystone Jobs Bill? Republicans are good at naming things.
Cleanup efforts are underway in Glendive, while residents there are told not to drink water from their water supply.
Yellowstone River pipeline spill spews oil and cancer-causing benzene. Plus,
climate has always changed. This is something that everyone has agreed and no one will debate.
Senate Republicans vote climate change is not a hoax. But there's a catch.
All of those catches and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Warms your heart, doesn't it? Pipelines are great.
Pipelines are great. And unlike your heart, they'll never break. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, a very busy 6 minutes today. The big State of the Union address this year. Republicans posted it on their website, and what did they do? They removed the portion concerning climate change.
Yeah, they just posted it completely edited out. They said it wasn't intentional, and they're trying to work with YouTube to find out what happened.
Yes, it was funny because they called it their enhanced version.
Uh-huh.
Enhanced by having fewer things they disagree with in it.
Now with less.
Exactly.
Well, whether you heard about it or not, on the Republican website, President Obama on Tuesday, in his second-to-last State of the Union address, focused on climate change.
And no challenge poses a greater threat to future generations than climate change.
It was the most that any president has talked about climate change in any State of the Union address. He reminded Americans of his recent historic emissions deal with China, the record amount of public land and water now protected, the record growth of solar and wind energy, and he pledged the U.S. would lead in international climate negotiations. You know what he didn't say?
Well, according to the Republicans' website, he didn't talk about climate change.
Yeah, well, he didn't talk about the all-of-the-above energy strategy.
Oh, that's what he's been talking about for years, all-of-the-above, which includes nuclear, oil, so-called clean coal. He didn't mention that, did he?
No, he didn't. He did destroy this year's Republican excuse for stopping action on climate. Their frequently used, I am not a scientist dodge, saying he wasn't either, but he knows some good ones at NASA and NOAA. And he ridiculed Republicans' neglect of the nation's infrastructure over their obsession with the controversial Keystone XL pipeline from Canada.
Let's set our sights higher than a single oil pipeline. Let's pass a bipartisan infrastructure plan that could create more than 30 times as many jobs per year and make this country stronger for decades to come.
In the Republican response to the State of the Union, Tea Party freshman senator from Iowa, Joni Ernst, focused on Keystone and gave it a sneaky new name.
One you've probably heard about is the Keystone Jobs Bill.
The what?
Yeah, I know. Jobs Bill. Of course it is not a jobs bill. Again, at most, it will create only 35 permanent jobs once it's finished. Senator Ernst didn't tell Americans that Canadian pipeline owner TransCanada has begun eminent domain proceedings to seize the lands of Americans along the route who have refused to sell. Now remember, this is a foreign company seizing private lands for private gain.
And if I recall, Republicans are furious about eminent domain. They hate it. They're against it. So surely they'll now stop this Keystone bill because of it, right?
Apparently not. Landowners in Nebraska have now filed a new lawsuit against TransCanada to stop the pipeline, and now new polls indicate that Americans really just aren't that into it, with only 41% supporting it.
But, according to the same poll, only 20% oppose it. A full 37% don't know enough about it to make a decision. Desi, you're apparently doing a very bad job of informing the public.
I'm going to do better.
About time.
In the Senate, Republicans and some Democrats are moving forward on a bill to force the president to move on construction of the pipeline, despite a promised veto. So Democrats tacked on an amendment on Wednesday, forcing the Republicans to go on record acknowledging climate change is real and not a hoax. It passed 98-1.
Well, that's good.
But there's a catch. Republicans voted down another amendment acknowledging that humans are driving this climate change.
So Republicans now admit climate change is happening. They just won't admit that man has anything to do with it.
That's right. Finally, in Montana, a state of emergency and now a drinking water ban has been ordered for the town of Glendive, Montana, after an estimated 40,000 gallons of crude oil spilled into the Yellowstone River and contaminated the water supply. That's the second pipeline spill into the Yellowstone River in less than 5 years.
50,000 gallons from a 12-inch pipeline. The Keystone XL pipeline will be 36 inches, which, as a Brad blog commenter was kind enough to do the math, means it is 9 times larger.
Yep.
It also crosses the entire country, including the majority of the drinking water in the Midwest. But why worry? For much more on why you should worry, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Song. The Tool track was awesome, too. Great call, Michael. 12 minutes past the hour. And just if for nothing other than the song's awesome, but the video's pretty cool, too. Just look up Tool Enema, A-E-N-E-M-A. And it is, wow. it's a claymation. It's an HD claymation video. And, you know, well, never mind. Just, you'll enjoy it. I love that line, learn to swim, learn to swim, learn to swim. See, if we could get rid of some of that goddamn decorum in the Senate, every time Jim Inhofe got his octogenarian ass up out of the chair, you could have a few Democrats over there who actually know that climate change is real start chanting, learn to swim, learn to swim, learn to swim, learn to swim. Good news. Fundraising has started for this evening. I had a nice note from Nydia during the break. She said, you've been blowing me away all week. We'll start things off tonight with $50. Thank you, Nydia. Thank you very, very kindly. And that was followed in rapid order by Robert, who got us going as well. So we are now, we've crossed under the $200 mark. We got $190 to go in fundraising for this evening, and I hope a bunch of people will jump in and stand shoulder to shoulder, side by side, elbow to elbow, arm in arm, toe to toe, and whatever else y'all want to, you know. And hopefully we'll close the gap and not go into Friday on the front porch with a deficit. So to the Gizmo line, where I suspect. Let me check. Yes, I think we have Bill. Hey, Bill.
Hey, good evening.
How are you?
You, relative to what?
Yeah, I understand. How about relative to 5 minutes ago?
Well, you know, tonight you hit it on the head with the, you know, we talk. I can't believe these bastards will do things that are going to kill their offspring. Unless by then they think they can take a rocket ship to some place and live and destroy another planet, you know.
But I love that. I love that because I heard a clip. What was it, Limbaugh, the other day, saying it is, and it was the same, and proof that they have the same talking points, Bill. It is just stunning to me that we would think that we could ever, that puny mankind could ever affect the climate of the planet. And he too, and here's the funny part. I mean, I about choked on my grits when he said, my faith tells me that's not possible. As if. I mean, really? Rush Limbaugh has a faith? Yes, I have absolute faith that these Viagra pills will work every time I go down and rent a boy in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah. Do you think he pays rent on those kids, or he pays rent to somebody who provides the kids?
Well, you know, he's a job creator, so there's probably a little rent. There's probably a middleman.
Yeah. Well, I got a question for you. I'm trying to think of the name of the guy who originally did take me to the river.
I thought that was the Talking Heads.
No. That was a black.
That song? Okay.
Master Soul Singer, who did it long before they did it. I was doing the darn thing because I got it from him. He's the guy that got in some hot water. Well, she'd say his girlfriend got in hot water.
Al Green. There we go. Yeah, sorry.
So he played his version. The other day when on MLK Day, the local college station was playing some of the great old Dr. Watts spirituals, and me, I'm about as religious as, you know, my left shoe, but the music this brass band was playing was just outrageously good. It's just one of those things, you know. I'm looking for a book now, but I can't find it either, so. It's a biography of a New Orleans clarinet player. That's long dead. He's long gone. But he I listened to him quite a bit. I was going to master that damn thing, and and nobody plays it anymore. And I would just say anybody in the world that can pay it plays. Pete Fountain, if he's still alive, I'd be very surprised. Yeah, but I won't keep you. But you, once again, you're on the money, Bob. You're there, you know. And as I say, it doesn't bother me because the older you get, the closer that long home comes, you know. And my plans are to be cremated, and all my dog's ashes and mine emptied into Lake Chautauqua, which was a place I used to love to go because of that. And of course, the Chautauqua Institute. I have my bicycle up there, and I bicycle up through these beautiful gingerbread homes, Bob. And how do they keep them? You know, how do you keep anything in this society we live in? Because they got to tear it down and throw up another building. There's what used to be a big bank on 9th and Euclid is now a apartment condo of some kind, because that's where the wonderful quarterback the Browns drafted, and the guy can't seem to play for nothing, but, you know. What do I know? I've only been following the sports since 54, and in my generation, we didn't have sports talk shows. You had to read magazines, you know.
Like God forbid, newspapers?
Yeah, well, they still have those. Now, actually, the Site Society offers a number you can call and you can dial in newspapers. It'll be read to you, various and sundry, which kind of keeps you in touch with things other than the... Because the news you hear on the radio is just blatantly ridiculous. It's... how much truth is there to it? Well, how much is truth is there in the newspaper? There's one area, I'll give you this one that's funny as hell. They tore a building down at 36 and Cedar Avenue, and on the wall of the building next to it was a big sign that had been blocked when they put up a new building, and it was a sign saying, Elliot Ness for mayor.
Yeah, really?
He ran for mayor. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
He was safety. Yeah, he was safety director here for a while, and he got in a hassle with a gambling club, and then the so-called headhunter of Kingsbury Run. They were finding bodies all over the city with different parts of the body removed. You know.
Yeah. Yes.
And they never could arrest anybody for it, but. There have been several books written about it. One of these conspiracy things. It was some rich man's kid that was doing it, and they got him off the streets by swapping him into a mental hospital, but there was never any public notification of who this guy was, you know. So, in other words, this idea that we have all these crazy mass murderers, it didn't just start today. It's been around a while. People are capable of anything, and just because they're old or young or it happened a long time, my God, Bob, the Civil War, you know, you and I know the figures of how many people died in that event, close to 600,000.
Yeah,
when you got a population of 30 million, work that one out mathematically. When you've got 300 million, you've got the same percentage. Well, I don't know. And we're supposed to get in. And the things that happen all over the world just get swept under the rug by our so-called news media. Anyway, I'll let somebody else on here that's more relevant than I can be at times. But you take care of yourself.
All right. And you do the same. And we will talk soon. And thanks for reminding me about Al Green. I will go and find the Al Green version.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, that man was a singer. I don't know what he's doing now, but he became a minister for a while.
A church down in Memphis. But I think his Christian roots ran deep ever before he ever became famous via R&B.
Well, you know, that's the only thing I would say for when people were being horrifyingly treated, like our black citizens were, that anchor, the at least gave them something to cling to so they could survive, you know? Because it all comes down to survival. When the wall appears, you know, you're being pushed up against it, you've got to survive somehow. And stay out of trouble. We'll talk to you.
All right. Take it easy, Bill. Bye now. Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. And so that means both lines are open, 304-574-8178 and 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. They both work equally well if you want to get involved in the conversation. I think I'm running a bit of a fever. And it has nothing to do. I don't even know if cowbell will cure it. But we'll certainly try, right? Let's see. What else? How about we check in with this? You heard in the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen the mention that, well, they can't drink the water in Glendive, Montana. But this is a news story. This is a news story as of today. Oh, be joyful, right? Out in the wilds of North Dakota, there's been another spill, just in case you were wondering. Almost 3 million gallons of toxic drilling waste spilled out of a pipeline, and I love this phrase, earlier this month. We're only finding out about it today, but earlier this month. Now, they've had several of these saltwater, you know, brine spills, you know, just like pickle juice, right? It's kraut juice. Kraut juice is good when you're real hot and sweaty in August, two a days, you know, and you don't have Gatorade. No, because it's got a whole bunch of other toxic crap in it. This is the largest yet. They've had a bunch, but this is the largest yet. Pipeline ruptured about 15 miles from the city of Williston. Hey, Gunny Bob. Hope you're okay, brother. And it's affected two creeks, but it's being reported it doesn't currently, interesting adverb, pose a threat to drinking water or public health. Currently. It'll take a while before it has a negative impact on public health, I suppose. But these sorts of toxins are like that. I mean, you've got to blow the tops off of mountains and pump poison into the air and poison into the ground and poison into the water for the better part of a decade before you start seeing, 180% increases in certain forms of birth defects in pregnant mothers in mountaintop removal communities. It takes a little while. Summit Midstream Partners discovered the spill. I love that. They discovered it. Why, what's this? By Jove, I think we've got a spill. They discovered it on January the 6th, but government officials, they didn't get let in on the dodge until earlier this week. Yeah, really. Earlier this week. Let's see. Let's assume that earlier this week means Monday. This is 21, 20. Let's see, 18th. Hey, 18 minus 6. 18. Hey, that's 12 days. That's 12 days that Summit Midstream Partners kept the officials in the state of North Dakota, who really didn't want to know about this in the first place, from finding out about this giant toxic waste spill. You can call it brine till hell freezes over. It's toxic waste because that's not all that's in it. No. Let's see. There's lots of chlorides. Uh-huh. And a bunch of other poisons, sure. Now, the pipeline company, and this is, I love the way this is written, the pipeline company has been trying to clean up the spill by vacuuming water from the creek, but in doing so, they're also capturing a lot of fresh water. Imagine that. In a creek. You got a bunch of oil rig roughnecks out there with fucking shop vacs. Yeah, we're vacuuming. I think we're sucking up the creek too, boss. John Morgan is a spokesman for Summit Midstream And he spoke to the Grand Forks Herald and Battle Cry of Freedom. And he said, the problem is that the creek bed is kind of being replenished with water. So we extract, it fills, we extract, it fills. And it being a creek and all. Who'd have thunk? Also, according to the North Dakota Department of Health and Environmental Health Section, their chief, Dave Glatt, he said, well, I haven't seen any impacts to wildlife yet. Have you been out to the spill site? Well, yeah, but I wore a blindfold. 92,000 milligrams per liter of chloride concentration in Blacktail Creek. Normal chloride concentration being about 10 to 20 milligrams per liter. Jesus, 92. That's not... Wait, if I got my metrics right, that's 9.2 kilograms per liter? I mean, okay... So a milligram is a thousandth of a gram. Okay, so that's 9.2 grams. All right, there we go. See, I don't do math on the fly real good. 9.2 grams instead of 10 thousandths of a gram per liter. That's a lot of chloride. And here's one to make you go and scream. Hey, there's a we got a caller on the line. Oh, darn it. If you call in, you got to stay on the line. Because we'll get there. If you've had somebody there, call back. Yeah, get this. You might want a hockey puck. Our buddy Dave Glatt, see above, said, when you're at 9.2 grams per liter, well, that has the ability to kill aquatic life, and so we'll want to see if the aquatic life. Wait for it. Was able to get out of the way No, I'm not kidding. The section chief of the North Dakota Department of Health, Environmental Health Section, said, we'll want to see if the aquatic life was able to get out of the way. And they do that how? Fuck! 300,000 people got their water poisoned in Charleston, West Virginia, and surrounding counties, and weren't able to get out of the way! And you want a frog, too? Or a catfish? Or a crawdad? We should, of course, bear in mind that these creeks are frozen. So nobody's going to really be able to know what's going on or even know until the ice thaws in the spring. Salt water, you know, chlorides, salt water. But there's more than just salt. Yeah. Let's see, what else is in this filth? Heavy metals. Wait, what? Heavy metals? Oh, this stuff that got dumped in Little Muddy Creek and Big Dead Creek. Oh, Blacktail Creek. I'm sorry. This stuff is, up to 8 times saltier than seawater. And this filth can also contain heavy metals, you know, your mercury, arsenic, cadmium, barium, magnesium, manganese, aluminum, selenium, that stuff. And hey, party, it can even be radioactive, but it's great. This is good for America. Just ask Jim Inhofe. We gotta have energy independence. And, you know, what's a damn creek on the high plains anyway? God almighty. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
I guess you're talking to me.
That's you.
That is me. This is Ken in Erie.
Hey, Ken.
I have not talked to you for a while, and I know your dad's name is Ken. I always think about that. I was going to say that, but I always forget.
Cool. I'm glad you remember. And, thank you.
Well, you talk a lot about your dad, and, you know, my dad taught me so much. You know, I never appreciated it until, you know, like now, until we got older. After his dad, it's too late, but you can't tell him now. And maybe there is a God, and you can tell him, you know, maybe they hear you still.
Yeah.
Anywho, you're just talking about creeks. I live on my property is a 6 mile creek. It's 6 miles out of the central part of Erie. That's why they call it 6 mile. You know, that logic thing. Right?
Right.
I used to catch crawdads. I used to hunt crawdads, and I eat them, you know, frying up in a pan over a fire and some butter. Oh,
that sounds right. That sounds right tasty. But I bet they're not so good when they come pre-salted and with a side of arsenic.
Yeah, you know what? There aren't any crawdads anymore. We eat them. I have no idea what the hell it is. It's probably farm runoff. But there's no crawdads. There's none. It's like, oh my God, I eat this crap. I don't have any idea what the hell I ate. DDTs. Who knows? You know, sewer runoff. And I can't imagine what it's like to be in a, where you blow mountains off and, holy shit.
Have you ever seen it up close and personal?
No, I haven't, but I would love to, but I can understand how the extraction industries just kill off every living thing. You're talking about that jackass from the Congress. He's paid not to care. There's no global warming because he's paid not to know. He's paid to spew his bullshit just for the extraction industries.
Well,
Coburn, you know, Coburn, you were talking about Coburn, right?
So, well, he's paid enough to know.
He's a doctor. He's got to know. He's got to know. So there's not more insidious. He's not some dumbass. He knows. Go ahead, Bob.
I don't know. Inhofe, I think he's been paid for so long to be so wrong that being wrong is just default for him. And he'll probably go to his long home, the sooner the better, convinced that it's not. But see, that's one of those problems. That's one of those governance problems, Ken. Consider, if you will, for instance, the tradition that obtains among indigenous peoples on this continent, that they'd never make a decision without considering the impacts the decision will have seven generations out. See, if you were to do that with something like the Keystone XL pipeline, you could never build it. If seven generations had been considered in the formation of the Bakken shale industry in North Dakota, it never would have happened. If fracking was done if seven generations were considered before fracking took place, you'd never have fracking. And the same, of course, goes for mountaintop removal. But the thing is, you've got an 80-year-old guy who tops, maybe, if he outlives Robert Byrd, has, what, 16 more years left to completely F the planet? And he is allowed to have the power to F the planet for babies who are not even a dream in their their future grandparents' eyes. I'm talking about the babies. You know, he's effing the planet for babies that'll be born in 2150, and our system allows him to do that.
Well, it's free speech, right?
Well, this extends beyond free speech. This is the way our politics works.
It's a complete corruption of politics. It's complete corruption. Money is speech, and you know, fuck everybody else. The people who are supposed to represent, right?
Well, but yeah.
I know a little bit about Indian history. I love your show. I mean, you talk about that stuff, and we have a local high school with the Iroquois Indians that lived in this area. Supposedly, I don't know for sure, but, you know, I've always been an environmentalist. I knew about that seven generations ahead of time. I've always been environmentalist. I hate to say it because I know how freighted that word is, but my God, we gotta live here. We can't live on freaking Mars. Quit poisoning our planets. We gotta think ahead. What about your children, your grandchildren? You love your grandchildren.
But see, when you love money as much as the Republican Party loves money, when you love money as much as the Koch brothers love money, Even pondering the effect on grandchildren or great grandchildren, you know, you just tend to look and go, F them, I got mine. I mean, the entire operative philosophy of the Republican Party is igamfoo, I got mine, F you.
Yeah, I hate that. I hate them for it. And I don't like thinking that way. I don't like thinking about how, and, you know, to love people, but how can you do that? How can you just, I'm not religious.
Well, the reason you can't comprehend that, Ken, is because you've never been that wealthy.
Yeah, well, I've been poor.
And I mean, that's not a slur. It's just that there's something that happens to a lot of people when they get a whole lot of money in hand. They start thinking that money somehow affords them magical powers. Or, you know, I'm so rich I can leave it. You know, my great granddaughter won't have to worry about this. She'll have my money.
Yeah, well, I hope she can drink toxic water.
No, she'll have enough money. She'll have enough money to buy the clean water. She'll be there inside that Logan's Run bubble or whatever with all the clean water and the Soylent Green, and everything will be good for her. It'll be
but you're not cleaning that water with that dimethylchloro, what the fuck did Eric poison you guys with in West Virginia?
Oh, methylchlorohexane methanol?
Okay, yeah, I can't say
that. I hate myself for being able to just rattle that the hell off.
Well, I took a little bit of chemistry, but I can't say that. You learned it, and you learned it the hard way. They poisoned you, and it's poison. What else do you need to know? It's fucking poison.
Right, we do not have in the United States a sufficient punishment for someone who poisons 300,000 people. I mean,
no, we got sufficient punishment for being black.
Even if it was the federal death penalty, we can't kill the greedy, miserable, grossly, willfully, wantonly, negligent bastards 300,000 times.
Yeah, we can shoot an unarmed black kid.
Sure.
Or choke him to death, right?
Right.
We can do that. So why can't we choke these motherfuckers out?
Well, because...
Because
we are we are peaceful people and we are nonviolent, for starters. I mean, I don't support the death penalty.
I go off and on with the death penalty. It's fraught with difficulties. But, like, child rapists... You know, they need to die. And I hate to say that, but, they just need to go. Sorry. I'm jumping off topic. I'm kind of crazy about that, but...
That's okay. You're doing all right.
I'm nervous. I'm always so damn nervous to talk to you.
Yeah, but we've never had anybody...
Before family...
You're doing fine.
Go ahead.
You're doing fine. We've never had anybody faint away or anything, and you know, the one time we came close to it, we got that taken care of too.
Oh, all right, with Dr. Bill, or Mr. Stress, sorry.
Yeah.
Not Dr. Bill. Yeah, Mr. Stress. And he fainted away, and I called before him. I feel like I'm going to faint away because I'm socially nervous. I know there's family. I want to impress the family that you have built.
The family are impressed. The family commune congregation. They're plenty impressed.
Yeah, I'm Kinder Gen X.
Yeah.
I ever pop into the chat room.
Yeah, I see you in there now.
That's me. Because I'm talking to you, I'm not typing anything. This is a much of a...
Well, I mean, there's, you know, we can't all multitask all the time. I'm not typing anything either.
You're amazing. You can multitask like a big effort. I can multitask a little bit, but you're legendary.
No, that's not multitasking. That's attention deficit disorder.
Oh, okay. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I believe that for sure. So I have mentioned, I don't want to see that. We were talking about this damn Coburn person. I kind of wanted to mention a little bit myself. That,
go right ahead.
You know, so we can know each other. I'm a musician. I'm a drummer. I remember last time we talked to you, I was in a Kansas band. I also was playing drum set.
Yeah.
But I did play in a funk band, too. I learned how to play percussion. So my best friend's a drummer, and we played in this funk band. We played a lot of James Brown and, shit. I lived in Cleveland for like 6 months. I went to school out there, and we could have seen Mr. Stress, and I kind of kicked myself because I was trapped in the school there. On Euclid Avenue. He'll know exactly what I'm talking about. 54th and Euclid. And, I felt completely trapped because you had to go out with a dozen people. I could never get anybody to go out other than me and my, drummer buddy. And we didn't have access to, transportation. So when we move back here, it's easy here.
Easy?
It's just so much easier here.
Sorry, are you playing regular?
I'm kind of out of practice, but I'm not doing any. I did some roadie work. You know how that goes.
Oh yeah.
Lugging equipment around, I guess. My buddy, he was a, you know, getting a drummer, so I can, I was a roadie. I hate that word. I hate the word roadie. Like, I was an equipment engineer or something like that.
Well, it's a little, I don't know, it sounds a little more, it sounds a little sexier than, say, porter.
Right, well, a bouncer, I can do that. Or if there's females, I can... There's some crazy females I might be able to parcel off or something, but I was married at the time and didn't work out so well. But when we played in that funk band, that was a big deal. She thought I was cheating on her. You know what? I didn't. And then she ended up cheating on me, so. Whatever. I want you to say something, Bob. Help me out.
Well, no, I'm listening to you. I'm soaking in the story.
There's no story there. It's so scatterbrained.
No.
It's like some kind of thing.
No, you're doing fine. You're getting big kudos inside the chat room. You're doing great. But
that's pretty much the reason I called, because I wanted a little validation.
Oh.
Do you think this is like a blue state? If not, I never had a Democrat represent me.
Oh, no. I maintain no illusions about Pennsylvania. Rick Smith explained that to me a long time ago. Philadelphia in the east, Pittsburgh in the west, and Alabama in the middle.
Oh, absolutely. I've heard that too, yeah. Absolutely.
And then what was the other phrase I heard? Pennsylvania? But it could
be. Yeah, that's pretty good. I was hoping to maybe generate a different name for that, but yeah, that's pretty good. And then the last census, I know you've talked about this in the past, so the last census, they split Erie in half as far as representation, because they wanted to, you know, the black people voting, you know, they don't want Democrats voting together, because they never win Erie. So really,
well, I mean, at one, no, people. wait, at one point, didn't you have that Murtha guy?
Murtha, no, that's mid-state somewhere.
Oh, okay.
We had Tom Ridge for a long time. As far as the federal government, right? So we had Tom Ridge, and then, but the last census they split Erie. But gerrymandering, because you know what, the black people voting for, you know, Democrats.
Oh no, we can't have
so
that.
So now we got Mike Kelly and Glenn
Powell. Oh, you got Mike Kelly.
Yeah,
isn't he a lunatic?
He is a fucking lunatic. You know, he was born into frickin' money. His dad had a car dealership, and he inherited that business, so, you know, he's a confidence man. And, you know, fucking goddamn, I don't live in his district. I live in Towson, and he's not as crazy, but he is as crazy. He just doesn't talk. So he's looking like hides. You know what I mean? He doesn't try to get the media attention that Mike Kelly does. So he's crazy, but
well, the minute you said Mike Kelly, right. I knew we did. Yeah, I mean he's sold American, right?
Oh yeah, he's been trying to get with the crazy like the. You know, who we're talking about, after the presidential address,
you got a note coming in from Tim from L.A. Tim says, tell Ken he's doing a great job, and I'm now a fan of his. He's speaking very well, and I enjoy the conversation. Tell him he has a room full of fans.
I'll tell Tim right before I got on the phone with you, he posted a picture of Rush. I'm going to see Rush again for, like, the dozenth time in Buffalo. So this will be the 40th year anniversary of them being a band and, you know, a big Rush fan. So, whatever. No, we can go back to Mike Kelly. should I approach him about the Hank Act?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, yeah, do so respectfully. I think, yeah, absolutely. Because, you know, he loves the little fetuses. And there's a lot of fetuses getting harmed in mountaintop removal country.
Oh, that's right. He's not my representative. I keep on thinking he's my representative. He's not. It's this Glenn Thompson guy. And I have no idea.
Well, write to him anyway, and if they write back, say, well, I was confused. That'll be fine. Hey, Ken, it is good talking to you this evening. Very good indeed. And let's not make it such a long time next time.
I will try, but no guarantees.
You're doing fine. We'll talk soon. Take care.
Yeah, thanks, and love you, Bob.
All right. Bye now, Ken. Bye.
Bye.
Ken, Kenner Gen X from the chat room. Good call. And let's roll back to the Gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
What's happening, Jim?
Yeah, what was it? Phrase Igumfu? That's definitely the capitalist.
Yeah, Igumfu. I got mine FU.
Yeah. Mantra. I mean, I've even noticed it within a family, even though they don't even realize, and like we're talking about the Iroquois, and the people we stole land from of this country, they had more reverence for it because they seemed to be able to look much a generation ahead. And now things are split into quarters, you know, because of the economic system. How much profit can you make in a quarter or next quarter? And it's like if Carter had, you know, when he put the solar panels, if that had caught on.
Right.
Just thinking in development of solar technology, because the more money you put into it, the more the scientists can find better ways to utilize it and stuff. But I remember the first thing SOB, they would take them off the, and that's a big statement, you know?
Sure.
Take them off the, that people don't see. I find it's almost a fascistic vein in this country. Do you? Is it just me? With certain people.
Fascism?
Yeah.
Fascism in the United States is real can be, Jim.
I know. I look at them. No, but I mean, it seems to be running. I mean, it seems like we had that little reprieve when you had FDR, and I mean, even then, they're trying to get rid of FDR. But almost before he got in, it just like, yeah, right? Because they tried to pull some sort of coup, but then FDR, but I mean, I think the second he died, they already started planning to start changing the course and make sure there was never another FDR, you know?
And they've been pretty successful at it so far, haven't they? Because we haven't had another FDR. We haven't even gotten close. Well, the closest to an FDR was LBJ. And had LBJ had the common good sense to get the hell out of Vietnam, he might very well be the greatest modern president. You know, for his attempts to afford some modicum of equality throughout this society. But instead, he went batshit crazy over Vietnam, and, you know, that becomes his legacy.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of why he became president. That was the guy, I'm going to say, that was probably the understanding once JFK was eliminated. He knew under no uncertain terms that his objective was to get the Gulf of Tonkin incident. I'm not sure exactly when it happened, or, you know, get that, because there was like a 180-degree turn, because Kennedy was going to pull out. JFK was going to pull out of Vietnam by 65, wait for the election in 64. And, you know, they weren't the powers that be, or the military-industrial complex and just corporate America. Like the Fisher song, plenty of good money could be made supplying the army with the tools of the trade. They weren't going to have any of that. It's just like we're, even though solar energy in the long run would be much more profitable and much better for the environment, the oil companies, they want to make their money off their oil, even that oil is, what, 66% more, has 66% more contaminants in it, or with the other sludge from Canada. So, yeah, it's kind of depressing. And then he's like Obama. I thought he did a pretty good speech, especially that comeback.
Look, he gives a great speech, Jim. He gives an awesome speech. But there are cynics among us who think that maybe it could have been a better speech in, say, 2009, when he had a Congress. That maybe when he had a Congress was the time to get some of this stuff done. But now that the Congress is in the hands of the Republicans, now you start talking about the really progressive stuff you want to do if you can just get power back.
Which you can't do. He'll be out by the time the next Congress.
No, but he's trying to set the table for what he hopes will be a Democratic president in November of 2016. And he's holding out some hope, apparently, that there will be a Democratic Congress. He's hoping, as are a lot of the mainstream, and particularly the thin oxygen elevated ranks of the Democratic Party, that the American people will become so disgusted with the shenanigans of the Republicans that they'll throw the bums out. But you and I both know the likelihood of that happening in 2016, Democratic president or no Democratic president, is approaching nil simply because of the gerrymandering of the country. What, Alabama's suddenly going to become progressive? Mississippi is? Arkansas? Tennessee? Kentucky? Really?
Don't forget Louisiana.
Well, yeah, sure. Piyush Jindal's going to become an FDR Democrat? Can't wait for that one.
Yeah, and then it's like you were talking about that pollution thing. It's like I have a juicer, and I had some apples and stuff, and I wash all that, but I buy it from the grocery store. I don't know what pollutants are on, what chemicals are, even though you wash it, You don't always know unless you go into like the real expensive, super expensive, organic stuff, and that even though you're trying to eat healthy or do healthy, that even affects you and your children,
Absolutely. And again, I don't care if Walmart is carrying organic food now. March into Walmart with your family of four on food stamps and try to eat organic. You'll be able to do it maybe once every 13, 14 days, tops.
Exactly. So if you just work hard and you pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you'll live the American dream just right, just like that was comical. That woman gave the response that was to Obama. I mean, on one level, he is good to see that, but it's just like I wish he could do more, but it's like, it just doesn't seem. You think he just realizes it's just a limited amount of things he can do? And he just does a little bit for show, or is he just cynical like me?
It's a tough call. Jim, it's good to talk to you this evening. I think I'm going to take a little top of the hour break simply because I'm not at the top of my game this evening. But hopefully we will talk soon.
All right.
Be good. Bye now. Our buddy Jim calling from Louisiana, Stan. So both lines are open. I am going to take a break. I think it's pretty obvious that I'm running a fever. Still, who wants the shingles, right? And hopefully this will pass in fairly short order. No, Tim. Bob does not got to pee. Bob just needs a little break. Because Bob feels like crap. I'm not going to climb up on the cross or anything, but it's a lot more fun to do this when you've got the energy requisite to 3 hours of 3 hours of radio. So break time, and again, thank you to Nydia and Robert. They got us started this evening. We got $190 to go in fundraising to stay out of what, if it stays like it is, will be a pretty ugly hole by Friday on the front porch. $190 to go. 19 at 10. 10 at 19. And my little baking brain is not capable of any further gazintas nor ciphering. But if you'd care to join up with Nydia and Robert and go check out the PayPal interface, it would be a good thing. Because, bills to pay. Constantly, bills to pay. This is, a couple of emails. Going back to the North Dakota brine spill, you know, 3 million gallons of brine. 3 million gallons. You know what? Call me crazy. But I'm one of these people who's into government. Do you suppose maybe if the state of North Dakota, or God forbid, the federal government, actually took the idea of regulation seriously, that maybe that spill could have been stopped before it got to, say, 1 million gallons? Or is it just hopeless optimism to think that maybe we could regulate these pipeliners in such a way as to maybe prevent 100,000 gallons? Because I know. I mean, we're talking about human failings, because engineering is a human endeavor, and therefore it's going to be prone to human failings. I mean, pipelines are going to freaking leak. But do they have to leak 3 million gallons before the pipeline company realizes there's a problem? Do what precious few regulators there are, if any, in the state of North Dakota have to wait 12 days before they find out that the leak was 3 million gallons? Now, as noted, we'll put a kid with a rock of crack in his pocket away for 10 years. What's the appropriate punishment for somebody who leaks 3 million gallons of potentially radioactive, arguably laden with heavy metals, chloride brine into the waters of the United States of America, otherwise known as We the People? What's the appropriate punishment? 10 years in the big house? 20 years at hard labor? Oh, no, forget the hard labor part. I mean, that's for the kid who's got the rock of crack in his pocket. That's not for the people who wear suits and talk about energy independence. Now, is it? But what if it was your land? What if that creek ran through your land? Here, how much you want to bet that pipeline runs through land that was condemned by eminent domain, literally stolen from landowners for purposes for the benefit of the pipeline company? I'm not saying that for sure, but it damn sure happens. Used to be that eminent domain was supposed to be used for civic good, you know, highways, bridges, that kind of thing. But now eminent domain gets used so that a pipeline company can ram a faulty, leaky ass 3 million gallons. Anyway, Tim's note: vacuuming a creek. I vacuum my room. I pick up lint and dust and other particles. Assuming that the creek or river or pond or lake or whatever it is called is deep, how do they plan to vacuum the poison from the millions of gallons of water from a creek or river or pond or lake or whatever it's called? And even if they discovered the leak seconds after the pipe burst, looking at the Los Angeles' man-made river rushing into the ocean at 60 miles an hour, it would be stupid to try and catch every carcinogen, as the rushing water will kill the person vacuuming. Finally, any corporation has a fiduciary duty to make a profit, correct? Correct. It's their only duty. Wouldn't a vacuum system or a catch down a river cost money? It does. Therefore, it's safe to assume that in 10 to 20 years, there will be a pretty high cancer rate for the people who drink from the creek or river or pond or lake or whatever it's called. Yes! But remember, right now, it's not a threat to the public drinking water supply, currently. Nice adverb. Meanwhile, from Robert in Australia, you might find this interesting. The fracking nightmare is here in Australia. Our politicians don't seem to know any better. And guess what? The frackers are drilling under residential areas, under people's homes. Of course, it's the previous state government's fault. But as for actually stopping it, When Pierre Power and his family bought their Narellan Vale home a year ago, they did not know what they would be living next to. Evidence has been found in maps obtained under Freedom of Information laws, which show the suburban tunnels extending by as much as 2 kilometers underground from the wellhead. I've got 3 children, and I moved to this area because I thought the air is cleaner. It's a belief shaken last August by a toxic leak from a coal seam gas operation next to their home. Now Pierre says it's constantly on his mind. Well, hey, Pierre, buddy, it's not just constantly on your mind, it's constantly in your body. Coal seam gas leak. Coal seam gas. Well, I think that's where, that's that same dodge they tried out in, what, Wyoming, Montana, where they set fire to the coal seam and they gather the gas that comes off of it because genius money! Yeah. So, yes, a little break. Hopefully we will crawl out of this $190 hole we're in. And hopefully I'll dredge up the gumption to finish the program. Now, I'm gonna run and check the check with the thermometer when we're done here. I kind of know when I'm running a fever. This is not fun. This is, however, Conversation Radio, listener-supported. It is, in fact, the Horn. And I am, in fact, Bob Kincaid. We'll be back in a few.
My bones just thinking about the weather.
admit I am a complete sucker for Natalie Merchant's voice. Like the Weather from In My Tribe, 10,000 Maniacs, from, you know, like a million years ago or something. This is The Horn, Thursday, Thorn in the Side Thursday, and you know the numbers, 304-663-4676 or 304-574-8178. Thank you. Thank you for the kind thoughts, Cali Liberal. Hope you get better, Bob. Bob hopes so, too. And I will. I will. It's just, for the moment, it's a matter of letting this bug work through me. But again, I try to bolster my spirits by saying, hey, this beats the hell out of the shingles. Because it does. Hey, let's go check in with Robert in Morgantown. Hey, Robert.
Hey, good evening, Bob. I hope it sounds a lot better tonight.
So far, so good.
Okay, and I hope you get the film better.
Me too.
I know what it is to feel miserable from something like that. Been watching today, trying to keep an eye on my delegates down in Charleston today.
Oh, fun.
Oh God, isn't it? I guess
you've got some brand new Republicans to keep an eye on, don't you?
Did you get my little link on my Republican to watch about? I found Joni Ernst of West Virginia.
Oh, dear God, tell us about her.
She is, unfortunately, my newly elected Republican delegate from Taylor County. And while I live in Mon, I am in the unfortunate situation of being one of, like, two precincts in Mon and two in Marion that are lumped in with Taylor County into that 49th district.
Oh, God.
So she is my newly elected delegate replacing Mr. Moneypenny.
Yeah, and that is a more than estimable loss, Mike Moneypenny.
Yes. I wasn't a big fan of Mr. Moneypenny, but I'm far less a fan of this woman. And if you click through on the link to her Facebook website, her Facebook page, she's your typical Republican. There's a picture over there with her gun.
Of course.
And, one there with a side of beef. I don't know why we necessarily have that, but
ours is not to question why. Ours is but to vote and cry.
But, you know, I don't like to be critical of people until I give them a fair chance. Well, she put me over the top this morning when I noticed a picture of her with her fingers held up in a V with a young man with his fingers also in the V, signifying, you know, victory. We have our victory here. And the man is from Fox News Channel.
Beautiful.
Yeah, oh, isn't it? And even to the point that on Monday she used the quote of Martin Luther King. She has that there, too. You know, you said the only quote from Martin Luther King that white people know.
The content of his character,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, the content of your character. This woman is just so cookie-cutter Republican that it is just outrageous. And if you go and you start scrolling down and scrolling down, it just gets worse and worse and worse. Apparently she's another fan of the Huckabee.
Oh, of course.
It was just like a gift when I got into this woman's stuff because it was just so, you know, so absolutely what you would expect to find from just someone who is just nothing but a dyed-in-the-wool right-winger. And I see she's already got her committee assignments. Would you care to guess what they are?
Oh, sweet Jesus, please, no.
Well, she is from a farming family, kind of farming ranching, so which one would you want if you were a farmer rancher?
Agriculture?
Absolutely, agriculture. She also has...
Oh, she can make Walt Helmick's life a living hell.
She probably will. But the one, of course, another one I was watching, and I will tell you one thing. I was absolutely swamped with campaign material on this House of Delegates race. I got more on that than I had ever gotten on any kind of a race before. Even got, unfortunately for Mr. Moneypenny, a political stuff about 3 days after the election. Well, good that did him. But and I was just amazed. I know a lot of money must have changed hands just on this one single little delegate race for, you know.
It used to be that state legislative races were little pissant affairs where they were largely won or lost on one's performance at the candidate bean dinners.
Yeah, yeah.
Not anymore.
Has this been an effect of the decision 5 years ago?
This is Citizens United in its full toxic blossom.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you want to think about Citizens United as a flower for an analogy, think of Citizens United as that one orchid that only blooms like once every 100 years and smells like a corpse.
Yeah, they call that
only this one blooms every two.
Yeah. Yeah, and, you know, really, when you have an election that's every 2 years, you never really come out of the election cycle. I mean, you just go right into one from the other. Gosh, I've kind of lost my train of thought here for a moment. She got the judiciary assignment.
Oh, dear God.
Among the things that
and
I had
she's
got,
a, wait. So tell me, she's a proud graduate of Tort Flats at Harvard on the Mon. I'm guessing not.
You know, I haven't looked here. Let me click. I've got her page up now. Let me see. She is a nurse, by the way, and she has plenty of educational degrees. I scrolled down so far. Every time I had went down so far.
Yeah, stop. Yeah, stop scrolling. We can kind of hear the thumpa 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 thumpa.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah, that goes through the mic.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not finding it, but she is a nurse. She for a while there, apparently, she was the medical examiner in Taylor County, which she has resigned since she's gotten the House seat now. But
oh, God, I can just imagine the obituaries in Taylor County. The decedent
clearly died of liberalism.
Mm. There must be good money in ranching because she has her college degree. Her father, what got her in politics, she says here, is her father. Well, her father was Paul Elder, who was the mayor of Grafton for a while back in the 80s. So, you know, the pedigree's there, too. I know her husband. Her husband was in the same grade school, went to Grafton High School with me. And, you know, he seemed like a nice enough fellow, but, you know, years go by and people change.
Or maybe years go by and you find out they weren't who you thought they were in the first place.
That's true, too. You really don't know who you are until you start to become an adult and you have to go out and start fighting with the rest of the world. Here is a little fact. This is from the paper. She has this cut from the Dominion Post. It was about the money that was raised and spent on that campaign. And I assume this is just by the candidates themselves. Summers raised $31,860 and spent $24,558. Minipenny raised $62,920 and spent $54,630. So you had everybody up there. You're getting up to about $80,000.
But you know what? If Mike Minipenny had spent $1 million, it wouldn't have helped him, okay?
Oh, no.
Because I'm sure he got tarred and feathered with, he's one of those, oh, Bob, that one in our White House. Right? Yeah,
of course. And I was thinking this morning, you know, where does the Republican Party have to go now in West Virginia? Because there's only two things left for them, and that is the seat that they really basically already have, that Joe Manchin has, and the governorship. And the governorship really doesn't mean that much because they have veto-proof majorities in both the House and the Senate.
Well,
now,
right.
Correct?
And of course, bear in mind that Joe is thinking about whether or not he's going to bail out on being a senator. We'll know by summer, he says, and come back and be the governor we always knew he could be.
Well, I've heard the talk that he might come back for the governorship again, but I've also heard, you know, some rumors about a possible presidential.
Oh, no, please put those away. That all died when his own brother sued him for a couple of million dollars.
Yeah, I noticed he is being sued by his own brother, and I don't think that the Democrats would be very kind towards Joe, but he's not really progressive or liberal.
No, he's a mugwump. He's a Republican, and he's not even Republican light. He's a full-on Republican. He's the only Democrat in he's the only Democrat in the Senate who's a member of ALEC, for God's sakes, Robert. I mean, and frankly, he'd be up against he'll probably be up against Bill Cole come 2016. What's her name again?
I didn't give you her name. Her name is Amy Elder Summers.
Watch this space.
Oh, yeah. I warned my family. I said, you be careful about this woman because she can do you some damage. Now, the other committees I told you about, she did get the agricultural one. She did get a judiciary. Let me think. The other one was like roads and transportation.
How old is she?
She's 3 years younger than I am, so she would be around 51, 52. She's plenty young enough to
be dangerous.
Yes, to be plenty dangerous, you know. Hey, you never know 2 years from now there's a governorship up. Who is going to run? Do you think that Girk will run for election again?
No, I think the fix is already in. Joe's gonna come back and announce that he's gonna run for governor, and Girk, and that means he'll have to resign from the Senate, and Girk will appoint himself.
We're just going to flip them sort of in a way there?
We're going to flip them like we flipped them before. We're going to have Senator Girt.
Oh, my.
Yeah, if that doesn't send you running for the old Panther, nothing will. Hey, Robert, I enjoyed talking with you. I'm going to move
all
along.
Right.
You got another person
on
hold.
Say hello to your son, Ferb, for me. Him and I have something in common. That is, we are both Golden Horseshoe winners.
Oh, I will. That was a proud achievement of his, and I explained to him, you know, winning that Golden Horseshoe means something in West Virginia.
Oh yeah, I would hope so. My nephew is a winner too.
Wow.
He was admired the fact that I won it in about, I think it was 2002, he won it.
Ferg won his and was the second highest score in the state and didn't get to take the essay portion, but that's how high his
Wow.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Pretty
well, I hope he has a bright future. I saw your video of him this afternoon. Yes, I would advise people in West Virginia here to keep a close eye on this woman because she's right out of that cookie cutter mold.
Well, if we catch her castrating a cow, we'll know the fix is in.
I don't know if she could castrate a cow or that, but I bet she could, I bet you anything the woman knows how to field dress deer.
that's a requirement for every woman in West Virginia, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess it would be.
Yeah.
All right, well, you take care, Robert.
Good to talk to you. Audio is much better this evening.
All right.
We'll talk soon. Bye now.
Good night.
Our buddy Robert calling from Morgantown. And we will go straight over to the Gizmo line where, after yea verily, long, long, and long, we have Preston, the Horns resident optimist, on the line. Preston, goodness gracious, it has been far too long.
Yes, definitely far too long. I think you started traveling a little bit, and I was doing some things, and then the phone number changed, and I think you were Skyping for a little while.
Oh,
which
yeah.
Which is great. I understand that's free, but I'm not up with that technology.
No, yet. It was just trying to figure out a way to keep surviving.
I understand, and I'm sure the people who can do it appreciate that was offered. Because I know it's an expense for people to call long distance. I don't have a cell phone, with free minutes and all that. But it's well worth it for sure. And something I've been wanting to invest, time in and money too. I understand you have a PayPal button now on the website.
Well, there's a PayPal interface there at the contribute tab.
Okay, I'll definitely throw some coins in the bucket for sure, and I'm glad you're still going strong and have enjoyed, I catch it here and there and always enjoyed the callers and the Skypers, and definitely want to get back in touch with you though and say hello, and yeah, I heard you talking about fracking, and that's a huge issue here in Colorado. You know, our governor, Hickenlooper, who I appreciate some things about him, but he started off as a, I think he went to the School of Mines and studied geology, and, you know, with a geology career, you know, this economic system is set up, so, you know, that's where it
put it. Right, well, and, you know, that, I mean, we've got a, in fact, I satisfied my science requirements up at WVU back when I was writing my dinosaur to class by taking geology. I love it.
Okay.
I find it fascinating, but
it was
taught from the standpoint that it's just this very cut and dried thing. You know, either the rocks look like this. You know, this is igneous. This is metamorphic. This is sedentary, whatever. And there's no it seemed, because I took more than a couple of classes. Nobody was ever saying, you know, maybe geology won't, because it was just sort of a sterile science, and there were no ethics involved. And of course, then there was this huge school of mining at WVU as well, where again it's just cut and dried. This is how you get the coal out of the ground. This is how you drill for the natural gas. And maybe going into the future, maybe these curricula need to have a component of philosophy, bioethics. Something like that.
Wendell Berry poetry.
Right.
The writings,
yeah,
of Wendell Berry and so many others.
Exactly. I love it that you know who Wendell Berry is.
Excuse me?
I love it that you know who Wendell Berry is.
Yeah, I've called him here and there, and I think most recently, it's about a year ago, I think he was on the Bill Moyer show. And Moyers, you want to take a moment to thank him. He retired, you know, a couple weeks ago, and he's still doing some Facebook stuff, some internet work, and it'll be interesting to see.
But I doubt that there will be anyone replace him who has his either moral or intellectual authority.
Yeah, I mean, definitely a unique figure, a treasure, that, you know, will come in some other form. You know, we're all kind of unique in a way, and I don't know, I'm confident PBS people will find somebody. That's my hope anyway, for sure. Although even Bill Moyers himself is a little pessimistic about the future of PBS television. He didn't say it outright, but he seemed to kind of be indicating that, you know, they're trying to squeeze it. There are a lot of financial pressures. They've got a lot of well-funded ideological opponents, and they're getting squeezed. And then you've got, you know, the Breitbart-style video hit pieces that they send out. You know, they did one against the NPR radio people.
Right.
Do you remember that?
I do.
I don't think it was it Breitbart, or was it Ken O'Keefe? I don't know.
Yeah, well, it was James O'Keefe, and I'm not sure whose aegis he was working under. What is interesting now, though, is that as sleazy as James O'Keefe was and is, this Charles C. Johnson character is apparently proving to be even more toxic, if we can imagine that.
Charles C. Johnson?
He's got a website, and he is... This is the guy who sued to get the juvenile records of Michael Brown to prove that he was a bad human being who deserved to be gunned down in the streets.
Mm. Yeah. Reminds me of a book I've come across recently, The Eliminationists, by David Neiwart. He's a blogger and author.
Yeah, Dave's a friend of mine.
Great. Great. He's a Facebook friend of mine, and I've actually been in contact with him recently because, I've been kind of studying on some of the far-right organizing going on. And
he is a fount of wisdom and information on that topic. His book, The Eliminationists, it could serve as a textbook for anyone studying it. And he blogs for the Southern Poverty Law Center now as well, I believe, or was, I'm not sure.
Yep.
And does a tremendous job of shining a light on these well, you know, homicidal maniacs.
Yeah, yeah. I just posted to my own Facebook page a videotaped radio interview he did with a fantastic grassroots media operation called Talking Stick TV. It's based in Seattle, I think, and out of a cable access station. And so, you know, it's important to keep these projects in mind when we're seeing, you know, the corporate media and what they're doing. The grassroots, though, it's doing great work. But talking.
Well, I think that's where reality lives, Preston. At the grassroots,
yeah.
And I think it's the biggest part of where real media is taking place.
Yeah. So. Yeah, the Wizard of the Corporate and Military Oz, they're big. They've got a big profile, but talking Stick TV, although it's based in a small, pretty small organization, a local cable access channel, they've been uploading it to YouTube, and dozens and dozens of very good interviews with, you know, Nader and Helen Gallica and you name it.
Well, and if it goes big on YouTube, it doesn't matter what cable access is handling them. It'll become a force.
It's interesting because there's some data sometimes on YouTube about visits and views and stuff like that. And cumulatively, you know, they've been at it for about 7 years or so, I think, and they've had several million views.
Well, I kind of got a little object lesson in this. I was watching my son play a video game, and lo and behold, the video game had Kevin Spacey in it.
I saw he had done some voiceover work.
Well, but it's not just voiceover. I mean, it's him rendered to almost physical perfection.
Oh, really?
And I looked at Ferg and I said, is that really Kevin? He said, oh, heck yeah. I said, why would Kevin Spacey do a video game? He said, Dad, welcome to the 21st century. Video games sell more than movie tickets do. The money is in video games.
I saw that. I actually have a new neighbor who I think plays a lot of them because I hear a lot of gunfire and explosions going on down below me sometimes.
Incoming!
And there's a lot of that militainment, which, you know, it can be its own thing, but it's creative work as well. I have to give some of them credit.
Well, the rendering and the flow and the animation is stunning. It is absolutely stunning. The sound effects are mind-bending. Hey, it has been so long since you and I talked that I think I would be remiss if I did not ask you, because that between our last conversation and today, of course, the massive sea change has taken place in Colorado.
Yeah.
To wit, cannabis. And I just have to ask you, are the dope zombies just walking the streets with axes in their hands, murdering, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christians? Has Colorado become a hemp-laced hellhole?
Not quite. It's, about the year anniversary, and the Denver Post, I didn't read it, but they had like a 20-page pullout on the effects and culturally and regarding economics, entrepreneurs, that whole scene, and regarding legal issues. I'm extremely proud that we're doing this, that we're making this happen. And I think, you know, it's such a lesson. People are said for decades, you know, just there's too much of a money power in it. It won't change. But there can be these left-right alliances that can happen sometimes and make good things happen. The next concern is it being corporatized.
Well, yeah, and I noticed the fact that because the banking laws do not exist independently of the criminal law, that these cannabis concerns in Colorado are still having to deal in ice cold cash. No bank will, and I mean I find this comical. No bank will take their money.
Right, it is. It's a big nuisance for sure. And so what they're doing, and this is something that Hickenlooper and, you know, people around him have been helpful on, trying to form kind of a statewide, kind of a credit union. They're waiting on, they've got to get the okay from the Federal Reserve, so we'll see, and, you know, the insurance issues. But they're working on it, and I think they're going to make it happen. And so that'd be helpful. And, you know, I work with the state of Colorado and in the tax department. And it's interesting to see the numbers and all that activity and all this extra money to get to, you know, more money for teachers. You know, at the state level especially, it's more focused on social spending. And if you like your potholes fixed and schools maintained and teachers paid, I think it's a great industry to be able to draw from. And, yeah, so a lot of good things are going on. MSNBC has done, and actually CNBC, the business channel, has done some really good reporting on what's been developing here. I think most recently there's a series on like pot barons of Colorado.
I saw a little bit of that.
Okay, and they do a pretty good job with it. There's been other even better hour-long specials, but so the information, a pretty realistic picture is getting out there, and the people who are trying to frighten people and maintain that incredibly oppressive status quo, they're getting drowned out, and it's fun to see. So, yeah, as in Washington State and, you know, several others have moved at least to the medical marijuana stage, there's certainly still reactionary forces out there like D.C., which is trying to block that community's overwhelming vote to legalize it. You know, I mean,
it was overwhelming. There was... The uptight vote didn't have a prayer, but
yep.
Naturally,
yep. But there's some weird maneuver going on at the federal level that's putting up a barrier to them actually moving forward on that.
Well, you use the word weird, and yes, you're absolutely right. It's Republicans.
Okay, yeah.
It's the Republicans in the Congress that are standing in the way of. I mean, I thought they wanted to create jobs.
Right, right.
Well, as long as, they want to create the not high jobs. I personally think the thing that the Republicans are worried about, Preston, is, you know, we all know that libertarians are just Republicans who want to get high. And when what the Republicans are afraid of is that Rand Paul and that thing on his head will be caught down at the tidal basin honking away on Aqua Buddha.
Yeah. I'd like to see that, actually. I think it would be a healthy thing for the uptight voters. And
well, personally, I would, too. But Jesus said, in my Father's house are many mansions. The Republican version is, in our party are many closets. There's not just a sexuality closet. There's a pot closet. There's the booze closet, the coke closet, the philandering closet.
There's a lot of, definitely. Yeah, so your earlier point about, I thought they were about making jobs. And, you know, they're always talking about free markets, right? So let's have it. There are maneuvers going on that's making it harder for smaller operations, for sure. You know, this is where the over-regulation argument, there is some truth to that. The corporations are exploiting that argument for their own purposes, but sometimes regulation is used as a weapon against smaller businesses. So these bigger operations can come in and take over the markets. So again, the corporatization of cannabis is definitely an issue. And also patenting of certain strains, maybe, or genetically modifying marijuana, that's going to be a concern. So we'll see. You know, Big Pharma getting in on it. They're already working on it. They've got a couple products, but...
Oh, no, they're doing everything within their power to try to ruin it. Let's use the right verb, Preston.
Yeah, get what they can of the market or block it for sure. I mean, again, the hypocrisy of the society in so many ways. Just say no to drugs. But get all the Ritalin and Prozac and Zoloft and all that you can get your hands on.
Right.
If you've got an issue after the war, we'll put you on a whole bunch of them.
And remember, exactly, but remember, there's precedent already. I mean, you can put a squirrel gene in a kumquat plant and patent it.
Yeah.
So, I have nothing upon which to base this, but my paranoid, fevered little mind is pretty doggone sure, Preston, that the pharmaceutical industries are out there, you know. I mean, and they'll appeal to the whole, you know, to the whole paycheck customers with this. It'll be cannabis with wheatgrass extract genes, or cannabis with the genes of a free range cruelty free chicken spliced into it. Because the thing is, they're already marketing it. It's my understanding. I'm a firm believer in the gathering of empirical data, so I really do need to get to Colorado and find out for myself. But you walk into the places and there's like Bubba Kush and Bubblegum Kush and something that smells like, you know, booberry Kush and whatever. And so the fact that they're marketing it this way based upon these various and sundry non-genetically modified strains, you know, they're doing it the old-fashioned way, the same way that corn came from Teo Cinte. But you think Big Pharma isn't out there? No. Oh, my God, you know, Devin is just now telling me via chat, Monsanto has Roundup Ready BT reefer patented already. Oh, God.
Wow, okay.
I got a feeling he's not joking.
Yeah, it won't surprise me. Quickly on another issue, I don't know if we'd spoken since Denver lost its progressive talk radio station.
We haven't. I saw that happen, but we haven't.
Okay, and I'm sure you're aware, and maybe your listeners, but apparently, you know, Clear Channel has a lot of issues, but for whatever combination of reasons, they decided to have some stations with progressive, you know, Ed Schultz, Tom Hartman, oftentimes a local progressive host, and we had a wonderful one, several good ones. David Sirota was it for a while, but Gloria Neal most recently. Wonderful voices being broadcasted here in other cities, but apparently Bain Capital, which Mitt Romney is involved with, bought some kind of controlling share of Clear Channel and slowly but surely started picking off all the commercial progressive talk radio stations like San Diego, Portland, Seattle, Denver, and others. And it was a blow. It was a real drag. And a lot of people in the community hated to see it go. While the right wing just marches on, you know, they just become figures of the community, decades. They get these decade-long slots. And anyway, our local one who follows Limbaugh, his name's Mike Rosen, more sophisticated than Limbaugh for sure. He worked with the Pentagon for a while, doing communications, but I'd have to double-check that. But anyway, most recently, he took to task a 16-year-old high school student who had written about her anxiety over school shootings. And, you know, I called a few minutes of that today. I can't hardly stomach these people. I pity them almost more than I get angry at them anymore. But anyway, there they are. So thank God for the horn and Talking Stick TV and Tom Hartman. And I was going to say we lost Tom Hartman on the commercial radio station, but the community radio station has picked up a segment of it, just 1 hour a week right now. But
yeah, see, that's the problem with us here at the Horn, Preston. We're kind of dedicated to the ability and the right, frankly, of deeply frustrated callers to occasionally unleash entire B-52 racks full of F-words. And that, you know, that keeps us off the community radio, the for-profit radio, the shortwave radio, the CB radio. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, well, something to think about for sure. And who knows, maybe we can get a segment. Another, yeah, I know you've done some interesting interviews with authors in the past, or who knows, maybe just some random conversation. We'll get videotaped and put that up on YouTube and kind of reach out via that medium. And
well, there's actually a plan here if we can ever get it going. Some things, you know, B has to follow A and C has to follow B, but there's a plan here to go to video. I personally don't favor the idea because I'm not crazy about, I'm not starstruck enough to, no.
Sure.
But it's apparently where the future of the medium is. The only thing is, I don't see much value in a static shot of my talking head. So I've actually got at the peril of sounding like an egomaniac. I've got a vision in my head of what I would like a video presentation of the horn to be. And with any luck at all, we may be able to make that happen in the coming year. I was thinking earlier today, I would love to kick off sort of a brand new version of the horn on the 10th anniversary of the horn's existence in October.
Cool. That sounds great. And I've actually, you know, something that's been taking up a fair chunk of my time over these past few months is I've been more involved in creating media as well. And I used to videotape lectures myself back in the analog days.
Yes.
Had a Hi-8 camera, and I would actually air the lectures. You know, people would often go to the University of Colorado at Boulder or come by the community college here in Denver or speak at some church, maybe Angela Davis or Nader or Chomsky or Howard Zinn. Actually, I got to meet him a couple of years before he passed, and I recorded him at a labor union hall. And then I'd air them on cable access here. But I kind of stepped away from that for a bit. Everything got kind of computerized and digitized, and I just got occupied in other stuff. But I went back to it through working with other videographers, friends of mine, who do have cameras and have the skills to upload stuff to YouTube, and, you know, so we can share it on Facebook. And I actually have been collaborating with somebody else, another activist here in Denver whose work I've admired and supported for a long time. He organizes screenings, weekly screenings of documentary films at a local club, and you know, it's a good gathering for people interested about this stuff. And he does a lot of video work, but it was interesting. We had and actually getting a lot of views. He was uploading the stuff that I taped earlier years ago on my Hi-8, I had connected him with this guy who had this incredible archive of Noam Chomsky stuff, these incredible talks he gave on a tour through Europe. And then he put up a video of a guy named Ken O'Keefe. You were talking about James O'Keefe earlier.
Yeah.
And, I discovered a figure named Ken O'Keefe, and he kind of made a name for himself through being on that boat to break the siege in Gaza. A noble cause, for sure. But he's kind of, I don't know. I've listened to him speak, and some of it sounds very much like Noam Chomsky material. But then he takes it off in this direction of more of a right-wing populist direction involving, I think, very misleading conspiracy theories, unfounded ones, and really focusing on particular ethnicities, particularly Jewish people. The similarities to the Nazi-type propaganda are hard to miss. He's also a big fan of the Oath Keepers militia, and
yeah.
And he stated publicly that he's embracing David Duke as a brother in his political struggle. And I alerted my friend who had posted this video of these facts, and he was okay with that. So we had a falling out. It was very, a drag.
Yeah.
Mildly.
But,
you know, it's been helpful, so helpful to find people like David Nywaar, who, through Facebook, I got actually a chance to discuss this stuff. And Chip Berlay, I don't know if you know Chip Berlay's work.
Don't think so. But you certainly remind me that I need to get Dave on the program fairly soon.
That would be awesome, for sure. Definitely. While we were talking, actually, he liked that something I'd posted of his, that Talking Stick TV interview. But, so, you know, it's interesting. We can kind of create dialogue even on Facebook. You know, it has its issues with being impersonal and not face-to-face. I understand that critique, but still, it's an incredible tool. And I'm getting a lot out of it. And then out in the streets, I've been involved with a lot of stuff and connecting with a lot of different activist communities here in Denver, like the Denver Justice and Peace Committee, which they work in solidarity with people in, you know, Mexico and Guatemala. And most recently, they went to Peru and to be in solidarity with these people protesting the Conga mine.
Nightmare.
Yeah, absolute nightmare. Democracy Now! Actually did a segment on it recently. But it's again heartbreaking what's being the ecocide going on, and then the oppression of the people when they try to protest the stuff. And a lot of that stuff comes right back to Denver because one of the companies involved is Newmont Mining. In one of their major headquarters, I don't know if it's the world headquarters of Newmont Mining is here in Denver. And again, back to geology and learning only so much, like, to serve the extractive industries. You know, it had its time, I think. It has its utilities. I respect the workers, the labor that went into it, but, I think we can move on some better. I keep going to these conferences like the Bioneers Conference.
Yeah.
And it's all about design, the importance of design. If we just design things more thoughtfully, we'd have such a...
Those are little whispers that have to go into the ear of the universe. They really, really are, Preston.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's fun trying to find ways to make those whispers a little bit louder. And so despite my, the political struggle, it's successes and it's setbacks and it's the whole mix of stuff. And it can be joyful at times because Monday don't know if you noticed, but Denver has one of the largest Martin Luther King Day marches in the country.
Yes.
And there are 30,000 people out there, and it was a wonderful scene. It was great. There were some Republicans there. Like, there were a lot of, there's this group of mostly white people saying, I support Republicans of color, and, you know, trying to recruit. And they've got the right to that space.
Yeah, but you're not that far from Colorado Springs and a certain recent pipe bombing either, are you?
Right. There's all that energy going on that, I think this stuff needs to be called out and resisted wherever we find it. And, but again, it was one of those moments like, well, there they were, but here come the 30,000 people. And, you know, a lot of it's just not particularly politically engaged people, but, you know, beautiful, wonderful people of color and their supporters, and especially now in this time with, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, it was very politically, there was a protest actually during, or a demonstration during the march itself, and a lot of singing and chanting, and Johnny Five of the Flow Bots actually organized this kind of singing activist group. And boy, it was moving. It was, and we were just feet behind Governor Hickenlooper.
Wow.
And Senator Cory Gardner.
Oh, that must have been delightful, Cory Gardner. Hey, Preston, I hate to say it, but I got to get out of here because we've run right up against it. Our conversations are always wonderful. Please don't be such a stranger.
I will be back. I'll be back in touch soon for sure.
I look forward to it.
Up with you, man.
Take care, you know. Preston. Bye now.
You too, Bob. Bye-bye.
Our buddy Preston, the Horns, longtime resident optimist. Got to get out of here. Thanks, everybody. We closed the evening at a $190 deficit. Hopefully that will sort itself out somehow. Be well. Friday on the front porch tomorrow.